Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project would be underway. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, with my distinguished colleagues here today. Rosemary Armeyer from the University of Albany.
Hello.
Hello, Rosemary, a longtime investigative journalist and editor. And Dr. Alan Shartok, professor, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. How you doing there?
What day is this?
Exactly.
We woke him up for the show.
Oh, God.
Oh, well, you know. Don't worry. We'll get his juices flowing.
We'll get him warmed up.
We always do.
We do.
Yeah, we managed.
We'll just provoke him.
Yeah, that's right. Alan, what do you think about? Here's one of your favorite topics. Okay. What people find out online about you. We have a letter from David in Woodstock, who's upset about the notion of how to correct stories on the internet that turn out to be mistaken. In his case, he had a friend who had a claim against him of date rape, which he was able to prove through a tape recording was in fact consensual sex. But still, when you would Google this guy's name.
Even the correction on that one isn't great.
As in, I had sex with a creep. And now, anyway, you know, the fact is that he lost his friends, he lost business and so on. And so what do you do about that kind of thing?
Well, of course, everybody's allowed to sue. If you're slandered or libeled, you can sue. The problem is that much of this stuff that they put up is under some assumed or false name. And there have been several cases in which people go after the IPOs themselves and they don't win. I think there are a couple of won, but basically it's very, very difficult to do it. So to David, it's a terrible situation. We feel for you. I have to tell you, at least I do, I have to tell you, I have had much of it happen to me in my time, and people just lie and they get away with it. It's disgusting.
There's a case out of Texas this week where a couple sued over material about them that was online. It brought out all of the blogger commentators who do nothing but, you know, say bad things and have, you know, they're just very vicious. And they sued, and they actually won the case. The provider was required to reveal who it was so that they could go after them, and they won. So I really think that this is a problem right now, but it's going to change because of people like our letter writer who are so irritated by
it. The difficulty is when you have a story that is true, in fact, and yet it lingers there, and people may change. Maybe I cited this a couple of weeks ago in this program, a person who was arrested some years ago at a Grateful Dead concert for selling some pot, who is now a high school teacher, and when his students Googled him, of course, this comes up. And he's saying, look, it was a minor offense. This was erased, in effect, in the courts, and you guys on TimesUnion.com still have this available for the web spiders to be able to crawl and find this stuff.
And once it's out there, it's gone.
I don't think there's a solution. I don't think we can actually
erase it. I don't think there should be a solution to that. I think it should be there. And the next step, if we start taking this judgmental attitude that something should be on and some should be edited out, is that we don't report it in the first place.
Well, Rosemary, that's easy for you to say. But when somebody really, really lies and slanders you, it hurts. Some of us have been there in our lives. I have.
That's lies and slanders. We were, though, talking about when you really have done
something. Oh, when you really have done something. That's different.
So
that's
keep up there, Alan. We changed the topic here.
Yeah.
No, if there's slander against you, of course I would want it taken down. Absolutely. And I think the news provider has a responsibility to do that, to investigate those complaints. And if it's wrong, you take
it
down.
Trust
me. But what if it's real?
Trust me, yeah. Well, real we can agree on. If it's real, hey, fair game.
Okay.
But if it's not real, and believe me, there's a lot of stuff out there that is not real, that people are just making up. Barack Hussein Obama was born in, you know, another country in Kenya. We know it's not true, but they keep on saying it. And, you know, it's not a nice thing.
I think that as we have this greater visibility and more material is more readily available to people all the time, first, the importance of people learning the skills of judgment is important. We need to teach young people what we have talked about here.
Well, the psychopaths, I'm sorry for interrupting, but the psychopaths I'm talking about now.
Right.
You're not teaching them anything.
But I'm talking about the consumers, not the perpetrators. You need to teach people that everything they read on the internet is not true, and how to sort of make judgments about sources and value. And the second thing is we just need to develop as a society sort of a realization that there is an effort to put out false information and that we need to respond to this kind of polarizing
I think
stuff.
That we're doing a better job at writing about these kinds of horrible stories that we talked on this program a while back about the North Carolina governor. And suddenly there was a story out completely without foundation that she was under investigation for tax fraud or something. And that was debunked within 24 hours. There was one this past week with some vicious anti-feminist stuff coming supposedly from the mouth of Mitt Romney's wife. And that was debunked almost right away by people who did just what you said. Said, wait a minute, come on, no major candidate, even if she felt like this.
Right.
The problem is they put it out. Somebody's going to believe it. It's disgusting. And my feeling is that Rex, God bless Rex. I mean, you know, and I can say that because he's a preacher's son and brother of a preacher. But, you know, God bless him. He's exactly right. We have to teach everybody, you know, to read responsibly and to react responsibly. The problem is, Rexy, is that we've got a lot of very strange people in this country. As I said before, you ain't teaching them nothing.
Well, this actually goes right into the line of something that Ezra Klein, a Washington Post columnist, wrote about. He was making note of the new poll that showed that shortly after Watergate, the percentage of Americans who had a great deal or a fair amount of trust in the media was 70%, and now it's about 44%. Still, by the way, that makes trust in the media above that of trust in such institutions as banks. Congress, of course, is down in single digits.
I'm relieved that we're so much better than they are.
Bankers or congressmen.
That doesn't mean anything.
I will make the point that Ezra Klein of the Washington Post, he looks at two of these things. First, liberal bias is one of the reasons why people say they don't believe in the media. And second is working the refs, that is, people attacking the media to try to get them to respond in a certain way.
He's examining the reason that trust in the press could have fallen so deeply. There's actually something like 8 theories that have been advanced by our friend Professor Rosen at New York University.
He needs a column this week.
And Ezra Klein offers the notion that it's actually political polarization that is causing this, that each side is trying to push against the media to get their point out there.
Well, it could be. I've talked about lobbying the media a lot. We used to have lobbying the legislature. Now we lobby the media. And it's done very effectively.
And it's much easier now. There's so many more outlets.
So few people working for the mainstream media.
The interesting thing about the Ezra Klein article, I thought, was
that would be Ezra.
Ezra? Sorry. Ezra. I always pronounce things wrong. Sorry, Ezra Klein.
No, I just didn't want to get it wrong because I didn't want to get sued.
An interesting thing was the response he got. There are, if you printed out, pages and pages of comments to his blog, and it's debating, you know, no, it isn't polarization. It's the liberal bias.
It's liberal.
It really is the liberal bias. So.
Right. This is the point he makes also is that this is the result of organized campaigns.
Right.
You know, it is
absolutely
not an accident that these are efforts not only by Rush Limbaugh at the head, you know, the most powerful single man in media, by the way, in the United States, with the possible exception of Rupert Murdoch, is himself, Rush. But Rush is always attacking the media as though he's not a significant part of it. Mm-hmm. And then there are many, many efforts that follow designed to teach people not to trust what they read in their local newspaper.
Yeah, there's lots of studies in, among scholars of the media on movies, for example, which are completely fictional. And the media plays a bad guy almost all the time. Intrusive, rude, dishonest. Who would trust them?
Yeah, absolutely. In any case, we didn't finish quite a conversation a couple weeks ago on this topic of the apology by the networks. There was some ongoing controversy among email. Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you would like to share your thoughts with us, it's media@wamc.org. media@wamc.org. This had to do with the NBC producer.
Wait a second, did you say media@org?
I did not. This NBC producer who edited a clip of George Zimmerman, the shooter down in Florida, of course, of Trayvon Martin, edited to say that the tape of the police after hearing Mr. Zimmerman's call said, "This guy looks like he's up to no good. He looks black." That is, that was supposedly what Mr. Zimmerman said.
Right.
That was what we heard out of his voice on NBC. And actually, there were a few sentences in between there. And the dispatcher asks, "Okay, and this guy, is he white, black, or Hispanic?" And Mr. Zimmerman pauses and he replies, "He looks black." And this one producer at NBC edited it and lost his job, by the way, because of that.
Should
editing.
He have, Rexy?
Absolutely. That was journalistic malpractice.
That's terrible.
And I just want to make the point that, by the way, there is no, this is how journalism handles that kind of offense. You know, people always say, "Well, look at that, how terrible is the media." People lose their jobs over this kind of behavior.
Some do.
Well, they
some
don't. Sometimes you just punish them, but this was so visible and so political.
Yeah,
you
I can't imagine something that bad that wouldn't have been resulting in
firing. Does a guy like that ever get a job again for the rest of his life?
Well, he'll go to work for some production house. You know, he's apparently a talented editor, obviously. Mm-hmm. He can edit tape very
quite
well.
Quite creative, yeah.
So, but
either
probably
of you
not
feel
journalism.
Badly about him? You know, not.
No.
We don't know the whole story. You know, I don't think he did this deliberately. I think he was trying to cut down a piece of tape into to fit a space, and no one looked back over it. No one was thinking how critical this was. I think he was badly served by his bosses.
So
too.
You make a mistake, and for the rest of your life, you pay for it.
Well, that's the. It's happened to some of us, and so yes,
or,
yes, you do. But the story here now is, what about the station? They've made efforts to write this, and they put out an apology. And I think the question is, did they apologize enough and in the right places?
What they didn't do was, this aired on the Today Show, and they did not correct it and apologize on the Today Show.
Yeah.
So listeners who heard this in the Today Show, now, maybe there's been enough attention to this that people have heard it before, but there are probably still millions of people who watched that on the Today Show who believe that what George Zimmerman actually said was directly, was that shorter excerpt.
Well, exactly. But you know what? They could have made the correction on the Today Show, and some guy who was sitting there with his zapper going through the channels may have heard it. But unless they did it, in other words, my position would be, if you're going to play that game, it's never enough.
Yeah.
So you can say, okay, we'll correct it on the Today Show.
I have to say, David Carr of the New York Times media critic started all this. He wrote a column saying he just thought it was outrageous that they didn't correct on the Today Show. He calls up NBC, and they go and makes this complaint, and the boss there goes, "You know, you're right. We didn't think of it." They actually were bending over backwards to make this right. They were horrified by this. They fired the guy. They put out press releases. They're talking on national news about it. I'm just having a really hard time saying, wow, they didn't do it right. I think they put out a big apology.
Because
deserved, but I think they did it okay.
Because my point is the best point.
Yeah,
it's never enough.
Correct. I think you're right. And if they had put it on the Today Show, then would the complaint have been, yeah, but the Today Show became national news and a whole lot of people who didn't see the Today Show heard the newscast,
right, exactly.
Heard about it. So I don't, yeah.
Enough.
It's really hard when you do make a mistake. We have a little box on page 2 where we run our corrections.
Sure.
It's one of the best read parts of the paper, by the way. People really love to read the corrections. But people are always complaining, well, yeah, look at that little correction, and the mistake was bigger.
Huge.
Sometimes it was. Sometimes the correction actually looms bigger than the mistake itself. But it's really hard. We've had occasions where we've had a story that we thought was sort of wrong in its inception, that the whole notion underlying the story was
correct.
Wrong. Yeah, what do you do about those?
Well, you write a massive correction and it still appears on page 2.
Yeah.
And you're,
but
it's
in that little box. But
it's
in
horrible.
That little box, I love to read the New York Times corrections.
Yeah,
I love to read. And I love the sort of self-serving part, which is the New York Times yesterday published an article identifying somebody, David Zumzut. And his last name was spelled with an S. It's actually a Z.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's great stuff.
But speaking of corrections and apologies, which are connected, I want to recommend an article that appeared in the Oregonian this week. It's kind of going viral on the internet. You can find it by Googling for apologies. And Tom Hallman, who is the Pulitzer Prize-winning feature writer who wrote it, and he tracked a relationship between a pupil and a teacher. 39 years ago, the pupil did something bad. He hurt the teacher, and how he made up for it. It's just a remarkable piece of writing. It makes you feel proud of journalism again.
So we should Google Oregonian and Tom Hallman? Or
Hallman and Apology.
An apology. Hallman and Apology. All right. Very interesting.
Recommendation.
Excellent.
That's your homework.
That's the homework from Rosemary Arameo, professor. Thank you. Alan Shartok is here. I'm Rex Smith. This is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. And we have to always remind people of that because, as we were just saying, in broadcasting, stuff is fleeting. So even if we were to do a correction here of something that we said a couple weeks ago, folks might miss it.
Not only that, I just want to make a point. I think I may have made it last week, but I want to make it again, which is that we have a brand new webpage at WAMC.org, our home webpage. And it got set up. There are a couple of bugs on it. One of the bugs apparently was that those people get podcasts of the Media Project. And I never had any idea how many people were out there. Yeah. Because I got a lot of email this week about, hey, where's my favorite show, The Media Project?
Really?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you have to somehow re-register, go to the, there's a separate podcast page at WMC.org. You got to go there, you got to register, and you get it.
Wow, I'm telling you, I'm going to hire a bodyguard. I've been twice in the past week, people have come up and said to me, I don't know you at all, but your voice sounds familiar.
No kidding.
That is creepy.
Wow.
That's cool.
Well, that makes me feel good.
Either that or I need voice lessons and I'm going to give you the bill.
Well, I wrote a column not that long ago about the King's speech and how Andrew Cuomo needed to get the King's speech guy and, you know, and lose some of the accent and all the rest of it. And then I put in at the very end a throwaway line, which is, but I hope Shelley Silver, the Speaker of the Assembly, doesn't lose his accent because I love his accent.
Well, Alan, as you would say, very interesting.
You have no idea how many people talk to me about that one stupid line.
Yeah, it's amazing what people love to read about. Now, listen, we had a question that is a matter of news judgment, and it is whether the media is driving a story beyond what it naturally would be. And it has to do with the question about Andrew Cuomo possibly running for president in 2016. Mm-hmm. This was raised by reporters in a press conference with Andrew Cuomo this past week. He said, I'm not going to talk about it in much the same way that this happened to his father after the 1984 Democratic
Convention
speech.
He said his father peaked too soon.
He peaked too soon?
To me, this is...
Oh, he said it to you. Oh.
No, he said it on the... He said it in this press conference. And
interesting.
To me, that is confirmed, or not in the press conference, it's on the wires. And mm-hmm. And that is confirmatory of the fact that he's doing it. So he can deny that he's doing it, but he says his father peaked too soon. It means I'm not going to make the same mistake.
I don't know. I think this is a media-generated phenomenon.
Really? I think the newspaper in the Capitol writing about the performance and ambitions of the governor is completely legitimate, and you would be derelict if you didn't cover that story.
And I think, if I know anything about Andrew...
Wait a minute. Writing about the performance. What do you mean? But that's different
Governor's saying... performance and his ambitions. That's a beat that you must cover for us.
But what I'm wondering about is reporters who keep raising the question, well, what about presidential ambitions? So this is being raised by, as it was, in the 80s when I was covering the first Governor Cuomo. It was always the reporters.
And he loved it. And the first Governor Cuomo loved it. And I know that better than anybody. But I can tell you this. I am sitting here and I am thinking about the Andrew Cuomo I know. And I don't think he says he doesn't think about it. He won't be distracted. I don't think he thinks about it more than every second of every minute of every waking hour and when he's sleeping. So I think every move he makes is in some way related as a performing in this job to where he's going. So I think, Rex, even though I have incredible admiration for you, and I think you are a wonderful editor with a wonderful newspaper, baloney.
Well, there's a new device that's being premiered in Norway, which is really interesting. You put it on your computer, and it allows you to zap out the stories that you don't want to read anymore. Wouldn't that be fabulous? So, okay, people who don't want to read about the governor's ambitions, just zap that out, and the rest of us can read it.
And by the way, going back to a previous conversation we were having, Harry Shearer on Le Show every week for years has had a section devoted only to apologies.
Ah, that's
the apologies of the week, he calls it, and they're hysterical.
Yeah, I apologies are very powerful. That's why I recommended the article, and they're universal, and people like to read them.
Now, what about speaking of that software, Rosemary, there's this other new thing that the MIT Media Lab has created called NewsJack. And as I'm understanding it, this website enables you to create your own spoof version of any news website in just a matter of minutes.
Right.
No Photoshop skills required. You can basically, mimic the New York Times or WAMC.org. And,
what?
Yeah. What? What?
Yeah, so you can put in like your own stories, pictures of your cat, which New York Times might not run on their own, or put Fox headlines on New York Times stories.
Well,
you can
I think
make
that,
the news as you like it. Get rid of that liberal bias.
Yeah, now see, I think the Supreme Court, correct me on this, Rex, because you're a great, you know, understander of the law. I think the Supreme Court has given wide leeway to parody.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not stealing, but parody. And so, you know, somebody grabs the New York Times stuff and deals with it in a disrespectful way. I think that people at the Times who can get anxious about this stuff are going to get ticked off, but I don't know if there's much they can do.
Well, if it's parody, it's one thing. It's another thing if it's theft of a trademark.
Of course.
So you have to be a little bit careful about that. But, you know, it could actually be a useful tool for teaching critical thinking, what we were talking about earlier. If you can show sort of a fake version of TimesUnion.com or the New York Times to your students and say, now, what do you think about this? Or you can show your students that there is more than one way to frame an issue. You could put two different versions of a story, one that is very sympathetic to a particular point of view, one that is hostile, and show that actually this is some of the power of the way a news organization presents a story.
That is so gentlemanly of you. But I don't think when you, I don't think Rex, when it happens to you in your newspaper, you're going to be all that happy with the stealers or the belittlers, as my mother used to say.
The belittlers.
The belittlers.
That's a good word. The belittlers.
I love that.
Or the belittlers. You know, it stings.
Here's my problem with this.
Yes.
You know, I try to be new age, and I spent an hour learning Pinterest this morning, and I try to be, but okay, this is another new gadget that I would like, and I can create my own newspaper. But the Knight Foundation funded this Knight, which closed down all its newspapers, which were among the best, you know, in the country, sold them all or got rid of them. And now they're funding this kind of play stuff. Put this into like news literacy or into news gathering. Wouldn't we be kind of better off? And that's the dinosaur in
me. Well, Rexy makes the argument that it can be used to encourage critical thinking. I don't think he's right, I don't think that's what's going
to
happen with it. But I do think, you know, he makes that point.
Yeah, and that's why I'm going to learn it, and I'm keeping a collection of hoaxes that major media believe in and see how this changes things. But,
interesting.
But it's very disturbing to me. I don't like fake news. I don't like fiction. There should be no part of it in journalism.
Well, I certainly agree with that. By the way, Pinterest, which is basically digital scrapbooking, right?
Yes.
Do you think there's journalistic value to this?
Ask me in a week. I've just learned how to do it. It's basically a virtual cork board, and you pin things of interest. So you can
okay,
here's all the places I want to go, and you put like pictures of
Venice.
And
then you can just point that and go there, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And the cork board gets all filled up?
Oh, it's virtual.
It's digital. There's no such thing as full up.
But what does it do? I have like, I show my style, and there's hippie clothes, and I show, you know, places I want to go to, and there's Australia. What's the point of that? How do I connect that to news? And yet, you know, I want to learn it because it might be a way of telling stories, just as Twitter, I did not recognize at first, would become a legitimate news gathering technique.
Twitter,
now it is.
Ends up being tremendously valuable. We had a reporter at a county legislature meeting where a committee went into executive session, and he tweeted about this. And I was sitting back in the office, and I saw this Twitter feed. So I tweeted out, absolutely illegal. They can't close it down. The danger of this is that you say what's on your mind. I was wrong. They actually did have the legal basis to go into executive session.
Who makes up the word like Twitter?
There's no authority.
Who makes it to tweet or to Twitter?
The hashtag is what you mean, the label under which the story
is. No, that's not what I mean. I mean, if you say, I tweeted that or I tweeted that or I...
tweeted.
Well, yeah, don't give me that look.
Come back next week, folks, when Alan Chartok will get a clue.
And wake up.
We end on a high note. What is this Twitter thing?
Oh, my goodness. You make me look positively new age. That's great.
Why are you blushing?
Thanks, folks. We'll see you next week.
I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known.
floor. I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known.